Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and arrive at episode 559. Play the game. I'm Keith.
Play.
I'm Sean.
Play. I'm Glenn.
How's it going?
Playing the game.
You winning the game?
I hope so. Maybe I'm not even a part of the game.
Ooh, maybe not.
Maybe you're the part of playing the game.
Alan Moraine, count to four. Yes, I made a Deep Space Nine move along home joke. Because I'm that guy.
Did you guys do anything this week? We kind of had short turnaround time between recording last time.
Did I do anything this week? I don't think I did anything this week from the last time we've talked.
I'm going to have to defer to you, Sean, but I finished up that series we were talking about, Greatest Geek Year Ever.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Cool.
It's much better on the front end of the series than it is on the back end. It's still, the last couple of episodes were still relatively interesting, but I really kind of felt like I was more engaged with the topics from the first two episodes than I was the second two. So I don't know if it was lopsided just based on my tastes of what, you know, they covered, or whether it could have been balanced better now that I think about it throughout the whole, you know, over the course of the whole series, obviously.
Well, when you open with Summer Spielberg.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's nowhere to go from there but down.
Hit peak right there.
Well, the next one after that was, or not after that, but the next one after the one that they covered, Blade Runner and the Thing and Megaforce, they did the fantasy films. So they did like Conan, Beastmaster, Sword and Sorcerer.
Whatever. Dragon. No, Dragon Slayer was 80, yeah. Not 82.
And then the last one was the comedies.
Ah.
So it was Ridgemont High and Porky's, and which is probably why it was diminishing returns for me, because I absolutely love sci-fi. I like fantasy and comedy. It's just, you know, got to have a good comedy every once in a while. So.
And while those are all great classics, it's not like the highest of the highs.
Right, right.
So Tron was in the third one?
Tron was in the third one. Yeah, it started off the third one.
Interesting. I have yet to see three and four, so.
I think that's all. I don't think I watched any movies or read anything.
So every Friday we have a group of friends that we kind of rotate out for a Friday night flick, and we've been doing it for a while now. And Julian had something called The Portable Door.
Hmm.
And this is
that sounds familiar.
That just came out this year, didn't it?
Just came out this year. It's an English film. Mm-hmm. It stars Christoph Waltz and Sam Neill. So it's like, okay, you had me at hello. I'm on board with whatever. But it's a co-production of the Jim Henson Company.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
It was really cool. It's a little slow to get started. And it's a couple of interns that go to work for this very bizarre kind of the adjustment bureau style company where, you know, they make sure that you miss the bus in order to make sure that you meet the love of your life on the platform. It's stuff like that. But then the boss comes and tells him, you've got to find this thing and I've lost it. And it's a portable door. It'll take you anywhere you want to go. And then the hijinks really start to ensue. So it was quite fun and clever, and little shades of Monsters, Inc. And yeah, I liked it.
I caught a preview of it on YouTube, of all places. I think it played in front of something I was watching. The ad for it did, and I thought it looked pretty intriguing. I'll have to check it out.
I recommend
it. It's on Amazon Prime. I think that's where I've seen the poster.
Mm. What about you, Keith?
I haven't been doing much. I am like five chapters away from finishing the latest book in the Red Rising saga. So I've been trucking away at that, trying to make sure I get it done before the library wants it back so I can actually get it done. Because, you know, there's a like 10-person wait after me because I was the first person to get it. So I want to make sure I don't have to try to resume it later at some point. Right. So.
You don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, and I can't. It's a digital book, so it's not like I can even try to keep it longer if I want to. It goes back when its time is up. So it's not like I can even incur the late fees if it was a physical copy. So I just got to push and get it done. But it's been good. It's been a solid entry into the saga.
And for the listeners, Keith just celebrated a birthday.
Yes. One away from 40.
I was just saying, you're not at 40 yet, right? You've got
one more year. Yeah. I had a good birthday. We didn't do a whole lot. Just kind of had a low-key thing. Did everybody, all my parents and Sarah's parents, we had one kind of joint party to get it all over with one time. So that was kind of nice.
Didn't have to try to do get it all over with. You're at that point in your birthdays. It's like, get it all
over with. I've been at that point in a long time. And Sarah was just finally like, you know what? This year we're just going to do one big party. It's going to be easier for the kids. It's going to be just... And it was. It was pretty smooth sailing. It was nice to not have to worry about trying to coordinate something for three different times or whatever. So...
Yeah, you can take off celebrating until probably, 50. Then you got to do something big.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I recommend pinball.
I don't know. Now we'll probably be doing the same thing every year now just to make it easier. That's how we'll probably do all birthdays going forward.
It worked so well this time.
Like it, so. Yeah, yeah. Until it goes horribly wrong, right. We'll just keep doing it the way this way.
Wow, way to stay positive.
Well, when it's the in-laws and mom and dad who are divorced, they're all in the same house together, you never know what's going to happen.
Right, right.
You are invited on an adventure across all of time and space in a completely random order. It's the Police Box in the Junkyard podcast. Jump in the TARDIS with your hosts,
Eric Gulbranson,
Asad Keshki,
and
Matthew Kressel.
Explore Doctor Who TV stories, audio adventures, and books, both novels and non-fiction. The Police Box in the Junkyard podcast. It's the entire Whoniverse on Shuffle. The Police Box in the Junkyard podcast is a member of the Direction Point Network and is available about once a month wherever you find your podcasts. You are listening to Traveling the Vortex.
This is Tim Treloar.
This is David J. Howe.
I'm Peter Purvis.
I am Sadie Miller.
This is Lauren Cornelius.
Larry, it's Fraser.
For all things in the Doctor Who collecting world and beyond, the Doctor Who Collectors Podcast. I'm Larry Van Mersburg and your host, and I've been collecting for 42 years. You're listening to Traveling the Vortex on the Direction Point Podcast Network.
All right, well, we don't have a something new 2-minute review this week unless one of you guys did something that I wasn't aware of.
I did start looking at the box set for William Hartnell Season 2, but I only just barely started because I got that for my birthday.
Oh, you got that?
Congrats.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah, I got that, and then I got Flux because I didn't have Flux yet.
Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Not the game, the season.
Oh.
Because that game is now so confusing.
The game still apparently sets precedent in my head. And it's higher.
No, I went there too. You did not get the game. You got the season.
Yes, I got the season.
Ah.
This one I hadn't picked up yet and just put it on my wish list. And nobody had gotten it for me for Christmas, so I got it for my birthday instead.
Cool.
All together now, let's sound like canine with laryngitis.
All right, well, should we talk about some news from this week?
Yeah, the BBC has announced that the missing adventure Underwater Menace is going to be released in an animated format this year.
All right. Woof, 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 woof.
Four episodes illustrated in color and high definition releasing on DVD and Blu-ray.
I'm old. Am I the only one here that gets the Arsenio Hall reference?
No. I get it.
I'm just surprised that you're
That you're excited about it.
I liked Underwater Menace. And I'm excited for you know, hey, we're animating stuff. Bring it on. I'm ready.
So I,
considering we thought Abominable Snowman was going to be the last one, I was thoroughly surprised.
Yeah, I'm glad they're doing this for that. I'm glad that they've secured some funding elsewhere, which we still don't know where it's coming from, but presumably it's Disney, but
Doctor Who Mafia.
Yeah, but they've, you know, yes, this is great news. I'm ecstatic that they're doing it. I just wish it was something besides this story, which we kind of already have. Although, did you also see that this Blu-ray is going to not only have the animation in black and white and color, but they are redoing the reconstruction that they did for the DVD set, but they're going to do it better. They're going back, and it's not going to be the exact, you know, it's not going to be the sloppy throw together the stills in order and that's call it good. They're going to actually, you know, put a little motion on them and do it a little more like Loose Cannon and other recon houses have done it in the past. So it'll be a little more.
That makes me even more excited for this box set.
Let me say okay, I had to look at this real quick. Yeah, episode one reconstruction. Yeah, I had to look at that because it was in a tweet, and then for a minute there I thought, oh wait a minute, do they mean that's going to happen when it goes to the collection? But no, I think they're actually doing it for this disc as well. So,
there is reconstructions on the discs.
Yeah,
I just assumed those were going to be with the ones they did for the last box set.
And that's what I'm trying to remember because one of the guys that's working on the collection box sets confirmed that they were fixing that reconstruction so that it was better. And he confirmed it in a tweet, but then I couldn't remember if he confirmed it in relation to when it actually finally goes to the collection or whether actually when it comes out on this one. I think it must be on this one, so they don't have to
read it. It makes sense that it'd be both places. Yeah. I mean,
so by extension, we now have some sort of pseudo confirmation that there is going to be a second Doctor box set of the collection for this season.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there was any doubt that was going to happen one way or another. I think that they kind of cemented that when they released the Hartnell season 2 box set, which they still had a couple of things missing on there. So the Crusade, I guess,
was just Crusade.
Yeah, yeah. A couple episodes missing from Crusade. So
yeah.
This one
makes me kind of want to hold off on purchasing this.
Well,
I'm going to have a box set later though.
Josh Snares made a really good point on whether you should buy it or not. And of course, it's completely up to, you know, the individual, but he, and I agree with him, am buying this because it supports further animations. And paying for this ultimately encourages them to continue to go on and do this for more stuff so that when they do go to the collection, and the way I look at it is we don't know when we're going to get that second Doctor collection box anywhere. It could be a year from now, it could be 3-4 years from now. So at least you have this for the interim. When you get the collection, then you can unload this, you know, sell it used or, you know, to a used goods store.
And who knows, maybe they'll do something weird with the collection and only do a reconstruction.
Right, right. I doubt it.
I doubt it, but stranger things have happened.
They've spent a lot of money on all these animations. I'm sure all these animations are going to continue to go on. Yeah, so exciting.
I'm excited about this.
It's more Doctor Who out there, and yay.
Especially after the lackluster release that Underwater Menace got last time.
Yeah, right.
This is a nice, better do to the story. You can give it a little bit more credit than it deserves, or than it got previously.
It still falls on the bottom of the list of a lot of fan favorites, but
it's fun.
If you say so.
I was surprised they didn't include the dialogue of "Nothing can stop me now" in the teaser that they released.
There might be a reason for that.
Oh, come on. That's just iconic at this point.
For us.
I don't think they're going to trick new people into getting this. And maybe they will. I don't know.
Kind of wish that Victor Pemberton was around to see the remaster and the animation and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I made myself sad.
No, way to go, Sean.
This wasn't his, was it?
Didn't he do Underwater Menace?
No, he did Fear from the Deep, didn't he?
Oh. Well, I wish he'd been around to see that one.
Yeah, he was Fury from the Deep.
Okay. Fury from the Deep. Yeah, this was Jeffrey.
I have issues. You know, Jeffrey Orme
was who did this one.
Seeds of Doom, Seeds of Death. Get two underwater type titles in here. I can't be expected to keep all this stuff straight.
We are going on a journey, a very long journey, through the world of the Target novelizations and publication order. Every week, we are looking at a new book, talking about Terrence Dix, Malcolm Hulk, and all our Doctor Who novelization friends. Whatever you do, keep turning the pages. This is Jason Miller of the Doctor Who Literature Podcast, a member of the Direction Point Podcast Network, and you are listening to Traveling the Vortex, a Direction Point podcast.
Hi, I'm Rupert Booth.
I am known as Paul Ferry.
And my name is Barry Williams.
Together, we host Time Ram.
Time Ram's a cruel mistress.
It's a random number generator.
That also.
We roll a number from 1 to 13, and that's our Doctor. Then 1 to 300 for the story, and then we ram them together.
Even if it doesn't make sense.
Cruel, I tell you.
Time Ram, putting the wrong Doctors in the wrong stories, so you don't have to.
You're listening to Travelling the Vortex.
All right, well, let's move on to our review. Of course, now we are... Where are we? Oh, we're doing a second Toymaker Adversary Archive. This time we are covering the materials Solitaire, which was the companion chronicle from the fourth season, episode number 12, or story number 12 by Big Finish. And then we're doing the Toymaker, which is the poem that's contained in the book of poems called Now We Are 600, which was written by James Goss and illustrated by Russell T. Davis. And then Endgame, which is a four-part comic strip that was printed originally in Doctor Who magazine numbers 244 to, or issues 244 to 247. And then, of course, it was collected again later by Panini, which is the version that we have. So did you guys just... aside altogether, and we could even talk about this later, but did you guys read any more of that comic, or did you just read the Endgame installment?
I just read Endgame.
I just read Endgame.
I highly recommend you go on, because that's a really good era of Eighth Doctor comics in there, because what I liked about it is we got introduced to Izzy, which is the gal that was the companion that was in the Beep the Meep one that we reviewed just not but a few weeks ago, so... We got her introductory story in this one. So I'm not sure what order to go in these. They're all likely, well, two of them are for sure Eighth Doctor. The Toymaker could be any Doctor. It could even be the First Doctor, just a poem about their encounter. So do we want to start with the poem, since it probably is the one that is not...
Should I just read the poem?
Yeah, let's do that, because it's really short, and I think our listeners would enjoy it.
There is in my old picture book a page in which I never look. The toys within all seem to cry, and when I look, then so will I. The playing cards have such sad faces, the jack, the queen, king, and all the aces. A dolly and a teddy bear, sigh and wail in full despair. Girls and boys all turn to toys. So much joy each life destroys. They came here and they tried their best. Do have a go, my latest guest. I put them there, you know, my friend. Not all my games have happy ends. What's that? You think I'd let them out? Their snakes were laddered without a doubt. So many, many years ago, perhaps I might, you never know. Take care you don't end up the same. Now, care to try my Trilogic game?
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's a cute little poem. It is a cute little poem. I think it does a really fine job of kind of encompassing what the Toymaker is, and kind of gets the essence of him just in a few you know, dozen words.
And it gives kind of, I mean, if you don't really know what the toy maker, who the toy maker is, it might be a little confusing, but
that's true.
Those in the know kind of get what he's trying to get at.
I quite enjoyed this, and it makes me want to read the whole book.
Yeah,
like I'm ready to sit down with it now and just go, okay, let's pour through this one and do it. And you know, cutesy little animations, drawings from Russell T. And just this fun little verse from James Goss.
Yeah,
and,
I think
now I have aspirations. I should dust off Ode to America.
Yes, you should
release a book of Doctor Who poetry.
I think Goss wrote this entire thing, and RTD illustrated the whole thing. And it makes me admire James Goss even more. I think is he very savvy with the Doctor Who universe and keeping some of the, you know, the canon and coming up with these. I guess they're called cross media is what they were calling them, or transmedia. Transmedia, I think is what they're calling them. But anyway, coming up with those concepts, and he also writes good stories, and now we know he's a good poet as well. So, and I'm kind of up in the air in which one of these next ones can go, because the reason I have them in the order they have them is because of that's how the Complete Adventures website has them. So we can do them in that order, or if you guys feel like Izzy comes before Charlie.
I think Charlie comes before Izzy.
All right, let's do Solitaire.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions. Doctor Who, The Companion Chronicles. Solitaire.
Hello? Is anyone there? My name is Charlie Pollard. I don't know where I am.
Good afternoon.
I...
Would you like to buy something?
This is a toy shop.
A doll, perhaps.
They're so lifelike.
Aren't they?
Oh, this one's got a drawstring.
Help me. I'm trapped forever. Time interval complete. Yay.
If the game is playing by the rules, then it's hardly going to demand you identify an object you've no knowledge of in order to win!
If this shop keeps shrinking, you die as well. Sorry I'm not going to stay, but I think I've run out of patience for games. You'll forgive me if I leave early.
But of course.
Thank you, and good night.
Good afternoon.
No!
The Doctor always prized the ingenuity of his travelling companions. And then you killed him.
Yes, I did, didn't I? Shouldn't I be more upset?
What if there were a game you didn't know you were playing? Where you didn't know the aim and you hadn't seen the rules? Charlotte Pollard arrives in a toy shop, but she doesn't know where she is or even who she is. The mysterious owner wants to play games. He's the celestial toy maker, and he's already defeated the Doctor, whose essence is hidden inside a ventriloquist doll. The Doctor is gone, the TARDIS is lost, but the game is only just beginning.
Bum, bum, bum.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much I missed Charlie Pollard until we
listened to
this. Amen.
I think when we finish out the year, we probably ought to get some more of the Sixth Doctor and Charlie audios back on the schedule.
Yeah, because we barely dipped into that, haven't we?
Yeah, barely. I think we've listened to the first one or two stories is all.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean, you want to start?
This is just a lovely little two-hander with Charlie and the toy maker, and he's being all needful things with his storefront that she wanders into and suddenly can't remember anything about who she is or why she's there or what she was looking for. He makes a retail tactical error trying to steer her toward the ventriloquist dummy because nobody wants those. Grandparents, take note. No kid wants a ventriloquist doll.
I have two.
Why am I not surprised? Oh, God. Oh, this explains so much.
Actually, that's not true. I have one now. I only have one left.
Oh, it's even worse. I don't want to know.
Oh, you're thinking that Twilight Zone. Okay, you're creeped out by him. That's why you're saying that.
That and Goosebumps and Buffy. Yeah, there's a long line of ventriloquist dummies.
Well, there's a Twilight Zone episode too. So
who? Okay. I have to ask now. Where's the other doll at, Gwen?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, good God.
It is never coming over to your house again.
No. I don't think it was ever at this house. The last place I remember that was before I moved here. The other one is in a suitcase out in my garage.
No.
We keep him sufficiently locked up so he can't roam the house.
No. Ventriloquist dummies are
this one like would
one step removed from that creepy little plastic doll in Terror of the Autons. they are kissing cousins, man. They are just no. That's a whole bag full of nope. Yeah. I knew I could smell crazy on you when we met, but you were a Doctor Who fan, and we wanted to talk about the VHS tapes. And I was like, yeah, this guy's cool. Oh, damn it.
You fell for it.
Okay. Hang on. I have maybe somebody else should start, because now I have a lot to process. I'm having some feelings here. I don't know how to deal with them.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed this story.
Why do you have these dolls, Glenn?
Because
why do you have doll?
As a child, I aspired to be a ventriloquist.
Before the breakdancing?
Yeah, it was much before the breakdancing.
Much before the breakdancing.
I'm going to need an info your original one.
What's that?
Was the one you still have, your original one?
Yes, because it actually was, and I'm struggling to remember the name of the... It was my dad's ventriloquist doll when he was a kid, and so it's that old, and I'm struggling to remember the name. It's not Charlie McCarthy or Mortimer Snerd. It was another famous ventriloquist back at that time, but I, for the life of me, cannot remember the name of the doll. And then my other one was the one that I actually used to practice with, and his name was Snoodle, and he was just one that I had that, well, he wasn't like specially made, but we went to this, like, I don't remember what it's called in Colorado. They used to have this place, and that was kind of their thing, was ventriloquist dummies. And this, they had generic ones that they just made them themselves. And this was one that I picked out. And so, and it was a one of a kind. So it would have been like, kind of like, you know, how everybody has their own. This was my own. And so that was the one that I practiced with for years and years and years. But the last place I remember him being was before I moved to Topeka. So that's been 30 years ago.
So he's off wandering Western
Kansas. Yeah, he's off wandering in Western Kansas somewhere.
This is the most terrifying piece of information I could have given. That's somewhere.
Jerry Mahoney. Jerry Mahoney. That's the name of the one I still have. Yeah, Paul Winchell was the ventriloquist.
Somewhere in the wild plains of Western Kansas, there roams a doll. A Jerry.
I went to Vegas several years ago. Holly and I went to Vegas for our friend's wedding. This was... Well, I've been there twice, but this was the first time we were in Vegas for a wedding. And we were walking down the strip, and Ron Lucas was a ventriloquist that I grew up watching when I was a kid. Had Buffalo Billy and Scorch and Chuck Roast. And so I was a huge fan of his. And I think I just like, I don't know, willed this into being. We were walking down the strip and I looked over and I noticed that he was at the Rio. And I thought, oh, that would be great. But we were kind of strapped for cash at the time. We were kind of doing Vegas on the cheap that year. But not 10 minutes after we passed the sign for Ron Lucas, there was a guy that was handing out tickets on the corner. And all you had to do was buy one drink and you could get into the Ron Lucas show for free. And so Holly and I grabbed two tickets. And of course we had to walk because it's not on the strip. It's actually across the highway on the other side. We had to walk over there, which looks a lot closer than it is. but we walked over there and I got to see Ron Lucas and I just gushed. And so after the show, he came out and signed autographs. And I think I hung back for a long time because I wanted everybody to clear out because I knew I was going to be standing there probably talking to him. And I talked to him for about a good 20 or 30 minutes after most people had already left. So yeah, I was big into, I was probably more than I was in breakdancing. So there you go.
Okay. So
I really went off on a tangent. Still there. Sorry. I feel like I'm trying to justify my.
No, never yuck somebody else's yum. Wow. Okay. So I kind of feel like we now need you to go into the garage and unchain the coffin. I think we need a TikTok video or something of Glenn doing his ventriloquist act with this doll.
I can do that
for the podcast.
I can do that.
I'm
you
trying
still
to
have an act.
I don't know. I haven't done. I'm not even sure I can still do it.
I'm trying to decide if I'm genuinely hurt that you haven't dragged this out to show off your talent.
Well,
before now. Or if I'm very relieved.
You got to remember, this doll is probably from the 1950s. And I think I'm not even sure if I've reattached his jaw because the string that goes into the back that runs his jaw, I believe it's broke a few times and it may be broke now. Because I think we pulled it out to show Caitlin because she got excited about it. Maybe I fixed it when I brought it out to show Caitlin. It
the
might
nightmares
be. I'll do that. I'll go. I'll drag it out, and I'll see about doing a TikTok later.
Oh, there's a jawless doll. In your
well, it's not jawless. The jaw's in there. It's just not
just
attached.
It's loose. Right. Which is probably better because that means he can't talk on it.
Right.
No.
You know,
no,
it's funny.
No.
Even having seen the Twilight Zone episode and all of the things that have creepy dolls in it. Well, there's even a Doctor Who episode with the creepy doll.
Yes.
That's never been a thing that's creeped me out, ever.
I guess that would explain why, with all of the short films that we've done, you never once have volunteered, oh, I have a creepy doll at home.
Oh, yeah, because it's not creepy to me.
You can use that as a prop. Oh, okay.
So structured a whole short around it.
I know, right?
Yeah, because it's pretty worn down.
Definitely
would have
won us one of those contests.
It's pretty worn down too.
Do you remember that we were concerned about the one with the puppets that beat us, or that it didn't wind up beating us, but we were concerned about that one?
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, I forgot all about that.
Yeah, see, and yet you know. Those were like Muppet things. You had a legit ventriloquist dummy in the garage. I can't even right now.
How long have we known each other? Like 30 years? You're still learning
3 years. And I'm learning new things every day. Okay. Where were we?
Well, we got off on the topic of ventriloquism dolls.
Oh, solitaire, right. Okay. God, that's what we're reviewing. Okay, so grandparents, note for the record, most children not want a ventriloquist doll. You may want to feel that one out before making the trip to the store. Maybe
can
your
you
child thinks
that. Nowadays?
Yeah, I haven't.
Well, apparently not. The shop in Denver that, or in Colorado that that had them and specialized in them has, I'm assuming, gone out of business.
Yeah, I don't know if it's.
You know why they went out of business? They sold ventriloquist dolls.
If anybody knows, if any of our listeners live in Colorado, I don't think it was Denver. I think it was Colorado Springs or somewhere around Colorado Springs.
Oh, you can buy one on Amazon.
Oh great! They can ship it to you. That's even worse.
I know. I know what Sean's getting for Christmas.
Oh, good God!
You get a Mortimer Snurd and a Charlie McCarthy,
and a box full of spiders, and we can just call it a good time. So, real quick, one more thing. I don't deny that. There is an artistry to it,
mm-hmm.
but you know, when you get somebody like, say, Jeff Dunham, who has puppetry
mm-hmm.
as part of the thing versus those creepy old 1940s style.
Well, and that's just it. I think the ventriloquist dolls of this era are that more felt puppet kind of Muppet type.
Right. And those don't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's the creepy ones, you know. It's the
howdy doody ones.
The howdy doody, whereas one step removed. Well,
it's the Charlie McCarthy, Danny O'Day, Mortimer Snurd.
Their little monocles and their top hats. Yeah. It's a whole thing. So real quick, I'm going to ask one thing and then we'll put this to bed for now. to our listeners, I would like there to be a poll that we put on our Facebook or Twitter or whatever pages. I would like to know how many of you are on the side of right and justice and and sunshine and rainbows and unicorns and believe these things are evil. And how many of you are like Glenn and think, no, man, they're cool. I would just be very curious to get the numbers on that. So let us know. Go out to the social media feeds and hit us up on that.
Man, people are buying them. According to Amazon, 50 people in the last month bought one of these ventriloquist dolls.
Oh, good God. They're multiplying. Because that means there's enough interest to continue production.
This Jerry Mahoney on invaluable.com, which is a website for auctions and things, this is the one that I have, is estimated value is $150 to $200.
Wow.
Now I don't have the original box.
With or without the missing jaw?
Well, see, mine's a little more worn than this one. In fact, I'm not even sure. Yeah. The clothes are the same, but mine are slightly colored differently. And I definitely don't have the box that this guy has next to his, but.
Hmm.
Wow, we got way off topic, guys.
Okay. No, it was very interesting. And
I guess it was topical.
It was topical, yeah. and very interesting. And now I want to parlay off of that. What attracted you to this story, Glenn?
Well, I mean, it was not the ventriloquist doll, if that's what you're getting at. It was the fact that we were doing a adversary archive on the toy maker. The ventriloquist doll.
When you listened to it and there was a ventriloquist doll in it, did you get a little giddy?
Actually, I was kind of sad when she thought she hurled it into the incinerator.
Well, knowing that it was supposed to be the doctor, yes.
No, it was the ventriloquist doll. I wasn't worried at all. The eighth doctor still exists. He wasn't in any danger. There was a chance that this was actually a ventriloquist dummy that was getting incinerated. I was happy when it showed back up later. I'm sure you guys were creeped out that it survived.
Because you can't kill them with fire.
Which you think you should, because they're usually wood.
Yeah. That's how evil they are. They won't burn. Oh, God. Oh. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm having an attack.
Well, to the point of the ventriloquist doll, if you've only got two actors you've got India Fisher playing Charlie Pollard, and you've got David Bale playing Bailey playing the toy maker. It's
really clever.
It is clever. It suits the story so well, because I don't think I could imagine Charlie or India Fisher trying, you know, because a lot of times these are told from the companion perspective, and that's how they do it. And so when the doctor is in the companion's voice, it's because they're relaying the story to us. But this one kind of takes it a little different and does it from the perspective of a live audio play where it's not being recounted. And so to have the Eighth Doctor as a ventriloquist doll and Charlie speaking to it through that, and you hear Charlie's voice spoken back to her, makes complete sense, because it would obviously have her voice, because she allegedly is controlling the doll. So very clever.
Yeah. The fact that this story wasn't a narration at all. It's mm-hmm. one of apparently only three Companion Chronicles that did not feature narration.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way that they were going to incorporate the Doctor into it so she didn't have to try to do an impersonation was absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. This probably has become one of my favorite Companion Chronicles, just in the technical aspects of it, of they changed the mold of how it's done and made something so fresh and so different for the line itself.
On top of that, it puts the toy maker in a different situation as well, because most of the time the toy maker starts out in control and then the doctor thwarts him by either tricking him or winning whatever game he's put forward. But in this instance, it's like the toy maker trapped himself. He made a game that he ended up inadvertently putting himself in, you know, the ultimate game, and not realizing that he was actually playing the game rather than Charlie. And I thought that was kind of a clever revelation there at the end as well, or towards the end. It wasn't quite the end, but the revelation that he's the subject of this game and it's not her at all. She's not even playing the game. She's not aware she's playing a game because she's not playing a game.
Yeah, it was super clever, and it was it reminded me a lot of the Elementary Dear Data episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, where Geordi slips and asks the computer to create a adversary capable of defeating Data instead of defeating Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
So the computer takes that literally and goes, okay, it was a moment of that kind of inspired, that you done messed up, Aaron. And anytime the toy maker gets hoisted by his own petard is a good time. But yeah, that in and of itself was a great revelation.
Mm-hmm.
I especially liked the acting. I thought both leads were just spot on phenomenal. And as you said, Glenn, it made me realize how much I have missed Charlie. And it's been far too long since we've done one of her stories. And her annoyance that she gave the toy maker by being dense at times, you know, but yet it's still so charming because that's just who she is. It's not like she's dense. She has to do it all out loud.
Mm-hmm.
She has to work her way through it.
She's clever in her own way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's going on and on and on. And I'll be honest, I kind of thought maybe she had an out with that door. I was impressed with the electromagnet. It's not something I would have come up with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so points for effort.
Mm-hmm. But it's clever that they were able to kind of set up an escape room type situation so long before escape rooms became such a trendy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's really what this is, to some extent, is an escape room. At least that's how it's structured. Uh-huh. And this was done back in 2010. I mean, I know they've been around for a while, but I don't think they'd reached any of their heights that they are currently at now.
Which, not to speak anything into existence, but kind of makes you wonder now if they were going to do the Doctor gets trapped in an escape room episode.
Uh-oh. Spoilers.
Well, we just had a Charlie one, so, you know, they don't need to do that. That's just as good.
Yeah. I think the length of this is good too. You couldn't, I think mm-hmm. you could have done a longer form story with this, but I think that the nature of it being just a companion chronicle and what the story was, it really kind of fit in this hour long format as well.
Yeah. I think the hour long format works better for it because then you start getting, if you stretch it out, it starts getting a little tedious with her memory loss and right. you feel like she should be gaining traction more quickly than she is, because really through most of the first episode she's kind of treading water, not really making much progress until she actually gets rid of the dummy, and then things start really rolling forward. Mm-hmm. And then even still, everything kind of becomes a, well, nothing Charlie did really mattered a whole lot, because obviously she wasn't on playing the game. But that twist is such a good twist that it's okay that she doesn't really make any progress throughout the story, mm-hmm. right. except for eventually gaining her memory back.
Right, right.
And I love the fact that they kind of leave it open at the end of, was she really playing the game? Was he really playing the game? Is the doctor still a dummy? I mean,
is she still all of
that
was
left
game?
So, yeah, yeah. That was so cleverly done that they could follow it up with a sequel at some point if they wanted to.
Yeah. I think they just felt the inclination to have that cliffhanger ending, that, you know, what if kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay, Charlie. I imagine I'll be back to my normal self in no time.
Did you guys figure out his riddle about the moon?
No.
So the...
Neither did I. I thought I did, and then they changed it.
Well, the reason you don't is because it's a game we played in improv back when I was in college for acting class, and it's a pattern. So if it's a C and a D, the follow-up is, the pattern is C following D. So it'd have to be like, I went to the moon and I took a machine, but I didn't take inward. Why can't I think of something that starts with N?
But that's not how it always works.
No, it doesn't, because... but it's, you pick the pattern. So the onus is on the next person to figure out. So it might be, one way that we would do it sometimes is, I went to the, well, we also used to do three things. So he did more than one as well. So I went to the moon and I took a cat, a ball, and a fidget, but I didn't take and it doesn't matter what the next one is, cause it's not the, well, I guess you, yeah. And the next one you do the same, but I can't, I'm having trouble thinking things that start with M. I'm not going to be able to think of my another set of what I did. But what I just did there was I did three items, and the first item was three letters. The second item was four letters, and the fifth item was five letters. So there's the pattern. So the onus is on the person that's on the riddle to figure out what the pattern is within there. And I think that's how he was playing it. I think that's why it changed each time. And so each time you should be looking for the pattern within the words.
According to TARDIS Wiki, they say that it's all double letters.
Oh, okay. And then that could be as well. That makes sense.
So I went to the moon. I took a riddle, but I did not take a joke.
Yes, yes. Okay.
I went to the moon. I took a toy room, but I did not take a TARDIS.
There you go. Okay. So then they were using that pattern all throughout for this one. Okay,
yeah. I think it was the same one throughout all.
Yeah. And that was I listened closely, but I never figured out the pattern for any of the ones he was doing. So that makes sense now, because I hadn't thought about double
with
letters.
That type of riddle, then it's the importance is the words themselves, not necessarily the association.
Right. Or even what the word is.
Because that's where I was at. And I definitely felt like I was with Charlie, where she was like, okay, I went to the moon and I took a ladle, but I did not take a book. No, that's not it. It's like, oh, come on. Seriously? Okay.
Yeah, so they used the double letter pattern for this one. So they did that all the way throughout. I think I was too busy looking for different patterns with it that I didn't even come up with a double letter pattern.
Which, and the doctor says it at the end too.
Oh, does he? I didn't.
Yeah, he tells her what the pattern was.
I missed that.
Yeah.
Well, it was just part of it was one line among the info dump of
And it's she goes, doing it.
And then we went and did the thing.
Because she gets frustrated. It's like, oh, I wanted to figure it out on my own.
Oh, that's right. I do remember her saying
yeah.
that. Yeah. It's good stuff. It, I really, really enjoy
hearing, hearing them explain it versus hearing you explain it, Keith. You did it much better. This was a good one.
Yeah.
It was very good. Well, let's move on to the comic, which was Endgame. There's not a synopsis, right?
Or is I it? Have a summary.
Oh, let's do it.
From TARDIS Wiki. According to... Returning to Stockbridge, the Doctor is reunited with an old friend, gains a new companion, and comes into conflict with an old enemy.
Give this a bum bum bum. I like this one.
I did too.
Yeah.
This is actually my second encounter with this one, because the first time I saw this one, and I think I had mentioned this last week to listeners that wanted to follow along, I had stumbled across a webcomic that was a fan-made webcomic that somebody had done on YouTube. And absolutely loved that. And so that's been many years ago that I discovered that. So I had forgotten a lot about it. So I was glad that I reread it. But I absolutely loved it the first time I remember. And then coming back to it again. It's a little bit... I think it takes the toy maker that we got from the Celestial Toy Maker, the television episodes... And what has come since, where he's more of a master manipulator, but not, I mean, he plays by the rules kind of thing. And he did originally as well, but he was more menacing and almost sinister, I felt, in the Hartnell story than he has been in any story since. And I think that this kind of takes the essence of that, but also the game master element that has come forth in everything else we've had him in since, and sort of mixes all that together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I would agree.
I follow you.
He seems a lot more sinister in this. Mm. And obviously more manipulative and whatnot.
And of course, there's a Beatles reference in it, so that's cool. I want to go back and find out where he encountered Maxwell Edison before, because apparently there must be another story with Maxwell. I was going to go to the
Star. Stars Fell in Stockbridge is what it's called.
And it was a previous Doctor, right? So
Fifth Doctor.
Okay.
I'm going to have to look that would explain why he's returning to Stockbridge.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And even Max recognizes that it's the Doctor, but he's changed his face, mm-hmm. which is a nice reference.
I don't think I've ever seen... I wonder if this is in color somewhere.
You know, what's interesting is reading this, I almost feel like I have read this one before. And I don't think I have. I think maybe what it was is, I think... when I worked at Vintage Stock, that this may have been, we had a couple of the different Panini collections of the Eighth Doctor stuff. And I think I probably flipped through this one at one point in time at the store.
The cover of it looks familiar to me.
Yeah. There were just certain pieces of it that felt very familiar. And I kind of kept waiting for the story to take me to that familiar place, and it never did. And it's because I don't think that I've read it, but it just felt like I had.
Yeah. It seems to me that this is the book that I always saw on shelves here locally whenever, like, Hastings would have Doctor Who stuff, or maybe even, like, Suncoast, those kind of places, whenever they would have this kind of thing, or even Vintage Stock probably have had these come and go at a time as well. But this always seemed to be one, but this, and I think the Sixth Doctor one with Frobisher always seemed to be the one I would find locally, you know, here. And I probably flipped through it, and maybe you guys did too. And that's why it seemed familiar. You pick it up and flip through it real quick, see some of the imagery.
Well, and it kind of makes sense since this is the first Eighth Doctor collection that those places would pick that one up.
Well, and I think this was recollected, so this would have been in probably the late 90s, early 2000s. What's the publication on this? Well, this is 96 that came. Oh, 2005. Yeah. So this is when the mm-hmm. they put together this graphic novel. So yeah, 2005 would have been right around the time that they started carrying Doctor Who stuff everywhere because the television show had just come back. So yeah, this makes sense that this would be one of the ones they would pick up.
I don't know. There's a whole lot to talk about. I mean, the toy maker once again threatens everybody in a little bubble universe, only this time he's included Stockbridge as part of that bubble universe. So he's got the whole town in a snow globe, which was mm-hmm. a cool image. And he's looking for this ancient weapon that the Knights Templar thought was treasure. Turns out it was able to give light, the manifestation of matter. And he pits the Doctor against himself in order to have his own champion, which was another one of the things that sounds great on paper until you put it in practice and then go, well, the Doctor's not actually going to do that. If you based it off of him, you know where this is going to go.
Well, that's what I think it's very much in line with. If you've got it's not even really a sinister version of the Doctor, it's just a version of the Doctor. Yeah, ultimately, you know that the Doctor's going to be able to talk him into doing the right thing because it's just the very nature of the Doctor that's going to come down to at the end. So it's no surprise that he turns on the toy maker.
Yeah.
And they left it open, a little door for that particular entity of the Doctor to come back, because the Doctor talks about at the end that, you know, perhaps he didn't perish in the collapse of the toy room, celestial toy room.
I like the idea also that it gets turned around on the toy maker and an incarnation of himself manifests and he has to fight it. I think that's a nice, clever way to dispose of the toy maker for the time being.
Sort of a less subtle theme from the last.
Yeah.
From the last one. True. It's a little more less on point this time.
Game that becomes sentient as a, you know, just
the entity becoming sentient. Himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of clever ideas in this, and it works really well as a comic. I'm not sure mm-hmm. it would work well in any other medium.
That is very true.
Yeah, no, agreed. Especially the imagery that are in these panels, a lot of these panels. And I absolutely love and this is no stranger to comics, but I absolutely love the cliffhanger pages. The artwork mm-hmm. in this is phenomenal. I absolutely love the artwork in all of these pages, but the really grandiose splash cliffhanger pages, I think, are the best of all of these. And, you know, just most of them, you know, entail a grandiose toy maker in most of them. There's the one at the end when he finally reveals himself as the guy doing the crossword puzzle. And then at the end of the next story, when he's holding the snow globe in his hand, you know, another grandiose shot of the toy maker there. It's just the imagery in a lot of this is really, really cool. The snakes and ladder, which cliffhanger, but the snakes and ladder scene when the Doctor grabs the ladder and realizes it's the snakes below and, you know, says snakes and ladders, how amusing. I did just the artwork in this is tremendous.
Yeah. It reminded me in some ways of, Iron Legion. Just, you know, it had that very rich quality to the artwork.
Really strong detailed line art in this, and some of that can be attributed to the inks, whoever that was doing the inks on these as well. But anything else?
That was a good one.
Hello, fellow time travelers, and welcome to the Doctor Who Target Book Club podcast, the only podcast to discuss, in story order, all the Doctor Who novelizations. My name is Tony Witt, and every 2 weeks or so, I'm joined by a 2-to-3-person discussion panel, including our so-called expert who's been a Who fan since 1979. That would be me. We also get the views of intermediate, casual, and novice fans who either have never seen the show or who have never read these books until these podcasts, including
Dalton Hughes
and
Allison Fitzsafried.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you find good podcasts, or even ones like ours. You're listening to Traveling the Vortex, a Direction Point podcast.
All right, what else do I have coming up on the schedule?
Well, coming up next on the schedule, we return to Doomsday with our 60th anniversary tie-ins. We will be reviewing the novel from BBC Books, Extraction Point, covering hours 11 through 14. And then the next segment of the Doctor Who Lost in Time mobile game has hour 15, Wrong Place at the Right Time. And we will follow that up with some more 60th anniversary business with Once in Future, Two's Company, which is part four of the Once in Future massive crossover event from Big Finish. And then hours 16 through 19 of Doomsday, Four from Doomsday. Man, I love that title. And that comes to us courtesy of BBC Audio. So not a Big Finish, but an audio adventure nonetheless.
That's right.
And then we're pretty sure we'll return to season 6B with our look at The Annihilators, the third Doctor Big Finish audio adventure. That apparently is going to feature the second Doctor in some way, shape, or form.
Yep. And of course, you can find us at our website, travelingthevortex.com. If you get any value out of this podcast, why not consider putting some value back into it? You can do that by clicking on a Patreon link and consider supporting us. Remember, just a dollar a month goes a long way to help us. We certainly would love to have more from you than that. It helps us keep the lights on here. It helps us pay for our server, which is coming due in a few months. So
we
would absolutely love to have your support. Even if it's throw us $20 one month and then cancel your patron after that. Just make sure we get the $20 that month. That goes a long way to help us out as well. So, but any little amount that you can give us, and there's content there for you as well. Sean and I have been putting together some special content. Keith has been helping out with some of the quiz shows that we do put up there. So yeah, if you become a patron, you unlock other special audios from us. We've got another Star Trek coming up very, very soon. That's going up with that Sean did on the. This was on that. What was this last one? Well, it was a revisiting of some of the Kelvin timeline, and then getting to the. Well, you also talked about the next gen or not next gen.
Did the 40th anniversary motion picture. And then recapped Kelvin 1 and 2 and then went into Star Trek Beyond, Kelvin 3.
Because Star Trek Beyond wasn't out the last time you did the Kelvin Universe stuff. So, and then, of course...
And hey, if you're a Patreon, you might just get a special exclusive, performance of Glenn with a creepy ventriloquist doll. Because who wouldn't pay for that?
Oh, there's people away.
Yeah, I might. Yeah, I don't want to frighten people off. Apparently, they're creepy. yeah, but if you could help us out there, we surely appreciate it. Also, consider giving us a 5-star review wherever you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you join in conversations on our listeners forum on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on the platform previously known as Twitter. It's now called X, I believe. And you can also find us on TikTok, which hopefully I'll be able to at least show off my ventriloquist dummy. If I can get his mouth back on. anything else before we close this show?
I don't know. In my head, I think you need to do the whole Indiana Jones thing. You know, cue up the... and you pull the box out. And you blow the dust and the cobwebs off of it. And then you massively unlock the thing. And hinge open the lid. And
I have to have you come over and shoot it.
No.
No. if that's going to do it for this time, until next time, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
I'm still creeped out.
Play.
Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.
Direction Point! Direction Point!
A Doctor Who Podcast Network.